Here's Dave Pezzo on KITO Talk Radio.
And blessed to be a part of your day. Kevin Miller here on KITO Talk Radio. Our great friend Dave Pezzo is with us. The Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Glad to see you could make it in.
Well, it was tough to get out of bed after a three-day weekend. Man.
Well, not only that, but you missed us last week, I believe.
I did miss you last week.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
Well, we missed you. Well, yeah. Maybe it was, but I hold a grudge. Took some time off, and here
I
we are.
I was not time off. I was a grind.
Well, this is a grind.
Is it, yeah.
How about some empathy for me?
Okay, yeah. I do. I know. It is. It's a hard day in and day out.
But yes, yeah. It is such a grind. So we ask you the question here as we get ready for the last month of the third quarter. Is there any good news? Because we have a lot of bad news to go over today. We have a lot of uncertainty. But is there any good news, you being the optimist of the dynamic duo here in the morning?
Yes. Well, there's incredible amounts of good news. The GDP for the second quarter was just revised up to 3%. Now, Kevin, they said that that can't be done. The economists scoffed at – they did. They literally scoffed at the administration for saying that they thought we could get growth even this year up to 3% and maybe to 4% if we got tax reform and all these other things in place. Well, it's at 3% already. Couldn't be done. It is done. That's an amazing turnaround.
Well, what does that mean, though, for those of us that – you know, would like to get a chicken dinner occasionally and are looking at the high cost of gasoline, particularly here in the Gem State?
Well, gasoline's going to bump a little bit here because obviously
they
can't. Oh,
a little.
Oh, come on.
30 cents a gallon?
10%. 10%. It's not a huge number. It's not going to kill the economy. This, Kevin, is not like the move we had.
Now, hold on. You're saying it's not, but to a lot of folks, it could be.
Now, nobody likes the anything
you,
to be higher priced.
Okay, I just thought you might like it. You just seem to you're smiling.
You seem to not have a problem with it. No, these things happen, and we're going to have a short-term refining capacity problem because there obviously we don't have enough refineries in the country. Do you know we haven't built a refinery in over 20 years in this country?
And yet our productivity continues to go up.
It does.
Which is amazing. However, and we'll throw this out to everyone at 580-5436, 580-KIDO with our great friend Dave Pezzo. You know, isn't it time that we take a look at building some? I mean,
yeah.
You and I have talked about this for years.
Absolutely.
And particularly here in the Gem State, we have a lot of open area.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that alleviate some of the high gasoline prices we have because we either get it from Salt Lake Refinery or from the trucks coming in from Montana?
We wouldn't have a refinery here, but the point is well taken. We have refineries in Salt Lake City. I think it's the closest one. Denver has some. But the point is we are under-refined in this country. And so, yes, it would drop prices. We don't have access to oil. That's obviously why we don't have any refineries here.
Indeed. But if we built a refinery,
then we'd need a pipeline to bring the oil here.
Would we get – well, we got Canada right next door.
Well,
who needs Keystone? Let's have Gemstone.
Well, if we had it all the way through the state, that might get rather costly just to have a refinery here.
Right, but – you would make the money because we could feed Washington and Oregon.
Quite possibly we could. And then there might be a battle for Washington State deciding they want the pipeline to go there. There's plenty of oil in the United States. There's no question about it. But Wyoming should be developing more because they've got oil there. And, of course, the Dakotas, your favorite spots with the man camps and all that. They've got plenty of oil, natural gas up there. And the reason I mentioned natural gas is also because then it can use that to help in the refining process.
Yeah, but still, you have ordinary average Americans that are frustrated with this. They you know, gas prices went up even as Harvey was raging. It
mm-hmm.
seems like, well, we haven't even felt the impacts of it. The refineries haven't even shut down. And here's another excuse to stick it to us. So, Dave Pezzo, we're going to give you a promotion. You're going to be the Secretary of Energy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in America today, even though we haven't built a refinery, we've made them more efficient. Why in the world are we not flooding our country with cheap gas? Since we can. We have, you know, the fracking and everything else. I mean, we could technically be independent of ever importing oil again, and yet we don't.
We could be. We could also be running our cars on natural gas, and we don't do that either. Kevin, those are areas that really should be pushed forward. I don't know about refining. I would have to be honest with you, I don't know. I know our capacity is limited, but your point is very valid with the productivity gains that we've had. They are keeping up with the demand. Now, you run something like a hurricane, and there's a couple weeks in here that while they're trying to get them up and going, that we can see price spikes. But all of us want everything for free or super cheap on everything in our life. We want it convenient. We want one on every corner. We want all that. But when there's a disruption, I don't think we should really whine about it. It's the way it is. You know, when you get weather, are you going to have a couple weeks? We have a couple weeks of a spike in price. It'll be back to normal before you know it.
Oh, they're loving you at the gas pump. Not so much here this morning at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I don't think that people are patient with that. Now, Dave Pezzo, you're kind of an outdoorsman, a frontiersman, unlike your humble host here. And I mean, I see people with the big boats. Mm-hmm. I see people with everything else and the big 150, 250, 1500, 2500, you know, whatever you want to call these trucks. That takes a lot of gas, a lot of fuel. And quite frankly, if you're an American company, we should be taking care of Americans. First, we're going to agree to disagree, which we have. But let's get back to your pet project. Do you find it odd, and maybe that's not the word for it, odd that natural gas hasn't taken off, mm-hmm. and you look at your boy Musk there, Elon Musk, who's in debt, who's getting government subsidies and everything else, the king of solar, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Electric cars seem to be more prevalent than natural gas cars. Why do you think that is?
We chose as a country, I'm not sure why, but we chose as a country to back solar panels and also electric cars. That was our choice, not natural gas. And I think the reason why is that when we had all these major technological breakthroughs, the Obama administration was in. And remember, all fracking is evil. Natural gas is evil. All carbon fuels are evil. They're not a bridge fuel, which is what the environmentalists were so crazy about, is we've got to get more natural gas. And that's true. We do. And it's also statistically true that the air is cleaner than it was with millions more people than it was 20 years ago. So that is just a fact. And we need to acknowledge that we're doing well. And the main driver to that is that we move from coal to natural gas. Now, why we can't do that in the combustion engine and move to that is beyond me, Kevin. It would be a very simple process. And as you know, we've talked about this many times. They've had natural gas trucks for 30 years. This is not new technology. It's not, how are we going to pull this off? And when people talk about, what about all the pipelines you'd have to run to have a service station in the middle of Nevada, say, or whatever, people would have to plan better on some of their trips. That's all. And the fact is we have natural gas when you go to your house. How hard is it to hook that up and turn it on? It's not hard. So we don't have a hard time with it. And everybody has natural gas coming near them or to them. So the pipeline system's in place. It does not make sense to me, but basically environmentally, this country decided during the Obama administration and prior that the enemy of the planet was all carbon fuels, and that in particular natural gas was not going to be the bridge fuel. It had to go, and we needed to find and support other solutions.
But isn't this a boon to oil stocks that have been in the doldrums for quite some time? I mean, really, this does help the price of oil and the price of their stocks go up now that we're paying more at the pump.
Kevin, it doesn't. It's the refiners that are going up, but the oil companies are not. They're actually going down, and the reason why is because they can't refine that oil. So, in other words, they can't sell that oil. Now you can't, because the refineries are closed. So you have a circumstance now where the oil companies, we're seeing oil prices decline slightly, not a lot. It's not a big deal. But we are seeing the refining companies do very, very well because what they can refine is extremely expensive. And and they'll get these factories very quickly back up online.
Well, or even dumping or even using some of the strategic oil reserve, which, again, we go back to Hurricane Katrina. We go back to Hurricane Harvey now, and who knows what the other one's going to do. But is this any way to run back to you being the Secretary of Energy, Dave Pezzo?
Mm-hmm.
Is this any way to run our national energy policy where, you know, you go up the East Coast, it's two pipelines. That's it. There's no backup. So when Hurricane Katrina came in and disrupted that,
yeah.
And there were places as far as north as North Carolina running out of gas.
Yep.
So you take a look at Harvey, and we've got, what is it, the second largest refinery down and some other ancillary ones. I mean, shouldn't we start diversifying our refinery issues so we're not so subject to the whims of these hurricanes?
We should. And further, you have people like Cuomo. I can't think of his first name, but it's because I always think of his dad. But Cuomo up in New York is blocking all pipelines there. So to the northeast, even above, it's not just him. It's his neighbors in Vermont, et cetera, and particularly in upstate New York that are blocking a pipeline, and they've been blocking fracking, even though the Obamas, again, I want to reiterate this, that this was the Obama administration EPA. Said there was no issue with fracking, so it's been blocked, and that's where you find. Don't give me the facts, but Kevin, they could have a serious problem, and as it is, not just with a pipeline going down. There's only one source, and that source is gouging the people because they can't. There is no competitor to it. So without another pipeline, without fracking up there that way, those folks are paying a much higher bill because of those types of rules that don't make sense. And so, yes, as an EPA, or if you will, an energy secretary, my hope is that we get a lot done. This administration is getting a lot done. It just doesn't show up with tax reform. But it is showing up in GDP numbers at 3% when everybody scoffed and laughed at it. And that, in my opinion, is simply the trajectory of what's going on in our world. In November, the trajectory of more and more and more and more government, taxation, regulation, more and more and more, ended. And now we're seeing less and less. And because of that, that trajectory, businesses out there, like you and I have talked about, is suddenly unleashed. And they know what the rules are. And they know that they may not like the rules, but they know what they are. And they know they're not going to get worse. And they might get better. Now, that is a big boost to business. You do that along with energy, keep those costs low, we're going to see a tremendous amount of changes. And I think, Kevin, you have a great point with the Department of Energy. I think we will see some changes there.
More coming up with Dave Petso coming up next, and we'd love to hear from you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. What would war with North Korea look like for the American economy? Now, is that a way to start your post-Labor Day work day? I don't know, but we'll talk to Dave about that. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio. Oh, our friend Dave Petso with us here, Petso Center, Petso Financial on Facebook and Twitter. So, war with North Korea, it looks like your beloved markets are a little sluggish today.
A little sluggish, yes.
Just because we're worried about Kim Jong-un, the optimist, Dave Petso, what say you?
Oh, I'm worried about it too. How can you not be? We have a nut job with nuclear weapons, and I'm not sure what the end game is. You know, everybody says 10 million people, 10 million South Koreans will die. Their economy will obviously be in shambles with that, and in a nuclear struggle. The reality is, Kevin, I don't know, and neither do they, what our capability of knocking a missile out of the air is. I'm sure that the generals are abundantly aware of what that looks like, and at this point, I just wait, and like the rest of us, and wonder what's going to happen with crazy lunatic with nuclear weapons. It just is a really dangerous situation. It obviously is. And we can't let him continue the way the Obama administration just, hey, let's let Iran have nuclear weapons. Everybody gets nuclear weapons. Why not? Because we never stood up to anything. The Middle East is completely a basket case. But there is a new sheriff in town, and I look for the generals and this administration to not roll over on this. I just don't think they're going to appease North Korea.
On the other hand, though, what would that mean? What would the impact of that have to our economy when you think about something that we haven't seen in our lifetime?
Yeah.
This type of fighting, this type of bombing, this type of death that we could see.
Kevin, of course, everybody has an opinion and nobody really knows. That's the reality. We don't know what's going to happen. I find it amazing how strong the market is in light of this. We had a huge week last week. NASDAQ was up 3% last week, or almost up now almost 20% year to date. It's incredible. And this North Korea thing is not new. It didn't just happen over this weekend. So it's been ongoing. We've had all kinds of angst and problems in Washington, D.C., and yet the market continues to rally. I don't know what's going to happen, because if you wrote all these things out and knew they would happen somehow, you would not say the market's probably going to be up double digits year to date, and it certainly is. So we have, and that's on virtually any index you look at. Now, as we say, this is going to happen. I'd love to be able to tell you this is exactly what the reaction would be if the war broke out. But we know from our own experience when we have a Desert Storm, when it broke out, all the economists were wrong. The market surged as soon as the first bombs were dropped. So it's kind of the uncertainty leading into it is tends to be more uncertain and more fearful than the reality of what happens. But we're talking about nuclear weapons here, and that is serious business, and none of us knows. We do not know what our capability is. And if Korea's hit, that's going to be a hit to all markets in Asia, and I think ours substantially. But you have to stop and you have to say things like this. Look, if South Korea is hit, then Samsung dies and Apple surges. This is the if you will, I don't know, the dark side of all of this kind of discussion. So it is not one size fits all, and some markets are going to get whacked, and I would guess ours is going to get whacked pretty hard, but who knows?
Well, speaking of getting whacked, a lot of people believe that the whacking of the market is coming very soon for you and your ilk, that a big correction is coming, and whether, whatever economists you want to say, and I know you've been hearing this for years, but
yeah.
Isn't it the law of averages? You've gone through the bull and the bear. Isn't it time for the bear?
Yeah, the bull outweighs the bear. It's about two-thirds of the market years are up, so if you're a betting man, you would obviously bet on up. Unless you're a really stupid betting man, but you don't know year to year. We have great periods where we surge, and we certainly have gone through a big surge. Is it time for a correction? Sure, it was a time for a correction thousands of points ago, and all those really bright economists that told you, the sky is falling, it's Europe, it's Greece, it's Crete, the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on about right. All the things we're supposed to have worried about and we're supposed to have sunk the market. Kevin, market corrections are normal, and to sit around and wait for a normal correction and say I was right while staying out of the market for thousands of points, you're wrong. Any way you cut it, you're wrong. And many of the listeners, as you know, on this program have just been wrong for years. But they can't admit it. They won't admit it. It's really a weird thing to me because it is something where you have to say, look, the market has continued to go up. It didn't die. It's okay. But we're supposed to learn from our mistakes. And here's what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that I'm going to be right tomorrow because I think the market's going to go up. It doesn't matter. The long-term trajectory of the market is up. And to bet against that has always been foolish. But people who are negative, people who are dyed in the wool, end of the world is coming, people, they don't start businesses, Kevin, anyway. They're not entrepreneurs. They don't do anything except sit around and complain. And that's what they're really good at, is pulling out data points and talking about how the world is ending. Look, the world's got plenty of problems, and the market is going to correct. And it's going to keep correcting and correcting and correcting. But the next 10,000 points, my best guess, are going to be up, not down. I don't know when we get to 30,000. Maybe it's sometime after we go back to 15. But we are going to 30, and then we're going to go to 40,000 on the Dow and so on. It's what markets do.
Dave Petzl joining us here. Time for Traffic and Weather Together. And joining us now, oh, by the way, our friend Ted says, look, we looked into converting our shop to be able to handle natural gas vehicles. Get this, Dave Petzl, they would have to spend over $1 million to make that shop compliant to get to work on these natural gas vehicles, which more than likely aren't a lot out there.
No, they're not. That sounds like a lot. I don't know how big a shop he has. That's very interesting. Yeah. It would depend on how many. But, to me, it's a very simple transition for this country. And, yes, in order to get the initial surge going, the government would need to give some credits. I say those credits would be a whole lot better spent than all the solar and all the battery, all the money they give to Tesla. They just ought to turn around and give it to all of these different organizations and trying to develop natural gas. It's a great bridge fuel. We're going to get to solar. We're going to get to batteries that are amazing that can propel cars clear across the country. I'm sure we're going to get there. But right now, as a bridge, especially for trucks, instead of pouring diesel into the air, why don't we do like we have with our buses and everything else, equip them with natural gas? And that wouldn't take that much help to get businesses to change over.
All right. We're going to hear what Terry has to say, and then we'll let Dave Petzl respond. Terry, formerly of State College, Pennsylvania, good morning.
Good morning. We went from 75% to 78% of the population now lives month to month with their paycheck. 44% cannot pay their monthly bills. That's probably why they're not in the market. But my question today really is, China's about to set a benchmark on oil, and they're the largest importer of oil in the world. And it will be, of course, based upon the yuan, which will be convertible in gold. So maybe you could tell us how that would affect the petrodollar.
All right, Terry, we'll let you go on that one. And Dave Petzl, go ahead.
The oil is priced in dollars, not yuan. I don't know how else to answer it, Terry. I'm sorry. That just doesn't make any – they're not – the world is not going to be trading in yuans. They are not the oil provider, and they're not the determining currency in the world. It's manipulated currency. And I've heard this argument somehow about how Russia and China were going to collude. I think this was like 5 or 6 years ago, roughing it out, and how our dollar was going to collapse. And I simply asked the same question. Really, we trust the Russians. So you're from, I don't know, Lithuania, and you say, you know, forget the U.S. dollar. What I really want to do is I want to go with the yuan, or I want to go with the ruble, or some whatever they want to call the currency where they come together. Of course it didn't happen. It's absurd. And and petrodollars are, all petroleum is traded in dollars globally. That's not changing.
Terry, thank you very much. Okay, quickly, Bitcoin is running wild. I think it's up to like $4,000 a Bitcoin. What do you make of that? I have a friend of mine who has a friend of his that has a
that sounds suspicious.
A gazillion I'm just giving you the source of the credibility here. That has a gazillion followers on YouTube, which, hey, that's more credibility. That apparently that all he does is talk about Bitcoin all the time.
Yeah,
and people love the Bitcoin and they can't get enough of it. What do you make of this,
Kevin? I don't know. It's one of those things. Of course, I wish I would have bought taken all my stocks and real estate, converted it into a portfolio of nothing more than Bitcoin. And then, of course, I would be a billionaire because Bitcoin has gone up crazy. Not a little. I mean, like, you know, thousands of percent from where it started. I don't know where it ends because it's a completely made-up currency. I mean, it's just made up. And there's other made-up currencies coming out, but they're not succeeding. Bitcoin is. I mean, a lot of them have come in and they just sit there. There really has not been any other of these cyber currencies that have taken off. But it is made up, and I just don't know where the end game is with a made-up currency. That's what it is. I can't wrap my mind around it. It seems a lot like the tulip bulb craze to me. But there's a lot of smart people backing this, so I'm just confused, like Warren Buffett and everybody else, why people want to buy Bitcoin when it really doesn't represent anything. It just is this thing that's out there and in digital land, and I would also be concerned that it would be hacked anyway. I know it's supposed to be unhackable, but really, do we really think in this world that there's anything unhackable?
I would agree with you. I would agree with you on that. Dave Petzl, anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, Kevin. Obviously where there's fear in this world, and North Korea is a really fearful and serious situation. I just find it remarkable how strong the market is, how doubted and hated it is. This bull market has gone up 350% since the bottom in 2009, and yet it is the most hated bull market. I can't imagine how people could think that this is all made up or it's all phony, or as soon as the Fed goes away, it just doesn't matter what the excuses are. The market keeps running, and whatever the excuse is for not why you're not in, you're not in. And many, many people have not stayed in the market. So it is a difficult time for people to play catch up. And again, things are going to work out. They tend to always work out. North Korea as well, although, you know, I'm kind of glad it's a long ways away. It would be a worse thing if Canada had a nut job with a nuclear weapon pointed at us.
The words of Dave Petzl, the Petzl Center. Petzl Financial. Dave Petzl, we appreciate you. Thank you.
You too, Kevin. Love you too.
We love you. All right. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and good morning. Thank you for joining us. And our number, of course, is 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO. And don't forget, if you prefer email, we're at Dave at
excuse me, I said at Dave. Let's go. Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Not .com, .net. So amazing, isn't it, that the market won't go down? It won't. Everybody thinks it should go down. I mean, everybody. Everywhere you go, don't you think we're going to do it? Don't you think we're going to take it? You heard Kevin, you know, and all he's doing is echoing what everybody is saying. Why won't it go down? Too much worry. So much worry. So many problems. And we look at all the little data points, right? Well, the market leaders are so narrow, or all these reasons why. It's really kind of phony, right? I mean, it's just this whole, back to that whole idea that, you know, because I really missed it, you know, hedge fund manager, and I've been sitting out, and I'm really, 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 really smart, and so it couldn't really be me. It's because it's phony. It's the Federal Reserve pumping it up. And when they stop pumping it up, we're going to all die. And that was what I said, and I didn't mean it, but in Europe, we were going to die. And this just goes on, right? We've been through all this. And we go through this all the time, where we have all this great worry. And markets pull back, and then rip higher. All-time high. All-time high. All-time high. There's the pullback. And then the bears come out of the woodwork. Had an interesting discussion yesterday with a money manager. And I asked him why. You'll know why in a minute. I really like this guy. Why? Why is everybody always so negative? I mean, this is the most hated bear market in history. And why do they always parade around people that have been wrong forever? And immediately he goes, because they seem smart. Of course, I laughed, and we were all gathered around the table at the office. And we're all laughing because that's what I always talk about, right? If you're a bear and you're just like, oh, golly, you know, I'm so worried. You just, and it's even better if you got kind of long hair, you know, you get a little bit of a beard, get some grays working in there, and then you can kind of pull on it or at least kind of scratch it, you know, just kind of scratch your chin a little bit, even if you don't have a beard. And then you kind of tilt into the camera just a little bit, or you kind of lower your voice a little bit. And you just kind of say, you know, I'm really concerned. And then babble for a few minutes. And you're just like, wow, that guy's so smart. So smart. And you take somebody who's, you know, like a little bit of an optimist. You know, like they've maybe rode this horrifying market, you know, from like 6,000 on the Dow, 6,600, whatever it was, right? All the way up to 20,000. Not very smart, because, you know, actually, they have something okay to say about the economy, about the markets, about how things tend to work out, and the world is really growing, and so are corporate profits, and so are dividends, so are cash flows. Corporate balance sheets are the best they've ever been. But they're not as smart, somehow. And it really is true. And we look at that, and we look at the media, and I will talk a little bit about how the media just mucks things up so much. Talking about yesterday's crisis over and over and over and over and over and over and over. New crisis, boom, we forget about that one. On to this one. Just beat it to death. Beat it to death. And it's this fixation with everything that's wrong all the time. And it does. It makes us anxious. It makes us bad investors. It makes us worry about things that we can do nothing about, that we shouldn't even be worried about, don't need to be worried about. And it keeps people from investing or holding back some of their cash. They can earn zero forever. When, you know, when we think about that, you say, well, I just kind of get a little cash over here. What is the end game to holding cash? You know what I mean? What is the end game? Is it like, you know, well, that's my security blanket. For what? It doesn't earn anything. So you are securely losing to inflation every year. It devalues every year. my cash of stash, I want to go down. I want it to be worth 3% less every single year. That's what I do. That's my investment policy. To what end? You see what I'm saying? When would it come in? Does it come in because the market goes down 10%? And a lot of people go, yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. But when you get to 10, how many times have you been to 10? What happens about once a year? So how many of those 10 percenters in the last few years have you invested in, taken that cash out? And the answer is none. Because it looks pretty freaky when we're down 10. It looks like for sure we're going down 15, 20. And we're down 15. It's obviously going to be a full-blown bear market. And all you have to do is look at all the scratching beards out there on TV going, I'm really concerned. I'm really worried. Oh, my gosh. And they just all sound like each other. I mean, you sit around, you look at these guys. Jim Grant is his name. Really smart guy, you know. He hasn't been right for 35 years. But he sells, you know, I'm Jim Grant, and I'm just really smart. I have a really cool bow tie, and I look really smart. I got really smart-looking glasses and stuff, and I just have a way of oozing smartness. I'm always negative. I've never been right. But I ooze smartness. So people buy this. I mean, it's like, I can't believe you're going to go to this meeting or that meeting. Oh, and one of our speakers is Jim Grant, the eternal pessimist who's never been right. And he never goes away. It's incredible to me how people can do that. And this, we keep turning to it because we seem to crave negative news. We crave knowing more about what can be wrong rather than what could be right. We crave that. It's like we think we're getting information when we don't even know what they're babbling about. We don't, but they sound smart, babbling about, you know, GDP numbers being too low or too high, or this particular thing you take all out. You know, well, you know, I'm really worried about student loans. Okay. But isn't it great that all consumer debt is down? Yeah, but I want to take this negative data point out and sound really smart about it. This is what we do. And they do it with great, great appeal. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk a lot about the media storm and how we just can't seem to look away, right? We have a train wreck in the market. We got to look at it. We got to stare it down. We focus on the market when it's down. We don't care about it when it's up. Interesting. Fear sells. Anxiety sells. Disaster sells. Good news does not. It's incredible. We'll take a look at that today. And hopefully we're going to take your calls and your emails. That's dave@petzofinancial.net. It's 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. Would love to visit with you. 580-KIDO, dave@petzofinancial.net. You know, you think about this and you realize that when we're talking about news, and we're talking about the last few years, this is not ancient history, and it's important to understand this. The vast majority of people missed almost all of this incredible bull market run. They really did. Sitting in cash, waiting for the next downturn. You know, as Warren Buffett always says, you know, right, it's more money is lost anticipating corrections than has ever been lost in an actual correction. And we just don't understand how insidious this negative news cycle is. We really don't. I mean, it's just a simple little example. September 29th, 2008, right? The height of the crisis. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 777 points. 777. And of course, the headlines the next day read, Worst day ever for the Dow. Now, while that might be true on points, it barely makes the top 20 percentage-wise, which actually would be the only way it mattered. Right? Of course, they don't want to clear that up because the headline itself is worst day ever. Guess what? I was at the worst day ever. I was, you know, anybody back in 1987 that invested, that was the worst day ever. 23% off in a day. That's the worst day ever. Not 2008. But here's the point. Barely makes the top 20 percentage-wise of worst days. The very next day, September 30th, the very next day, the market goes up 485 points. Oh, it's not all the way back. Don't get me wrong. But here's the point. Do you ever remember a headline that said, Dow has third best day ever? No. No. You didn't hear it because it wasn't written. See, we just don't understand how insidious this is, how big a deal this is. Worst day ever, because negative news sells. Barely makes the top 20 worst days ever. The very next day, the third best day ever. Crickets. Crickets. But we don't think that affects us, right? You don't think that affects you. Just bring on some more news. Let it sift its way through you. The vast majority of people were scared out by Greece, part 1, 2, 3, and 4. But remember, it wasn't good enough to just be Greece. It had to also then the next go around, in order to really scare people, it had to be the pigs nations. Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. They were going to take us all down. Now, remember, Greece has a GDP approximately the size of Vermont. Ready to take down the world. That's how we get wrapped into this. And then you don't invest. You don't. You hold on to cash because you don't know. You want to lose a little bit of money every year because it's guaranteed you will. Not a great investment plan. Again, back to what is the end point? When do I turn that cash into an income-producing something, investment, anything? It doesn't have to be stocks. But you see how we get fixated on the simplest little things and grind them into monster stories. Bad news sells. We all get that. But we got to understand, too, when we're watching people that have never been right, why do we hang our hat on them and their opinions? Why do we think they're so smart when they're not?
You've heard of the fund police?
They're certainly not smart investors. They've kept you out. They've kept their investors out forever. Yes, if you invest, you're going to have bad days. If you need to sell that day, that's a bad day. But you don't have to sell that day. So why we fuss about price movement, I don't understand. Well, I'm going to retire soon. So what? What do you do? Put it under the mattress? Pull dollar bills out? Run to the store? No, you're going to stay invested for the next 30 years till you're dead. Well, I'm getting pretty old. Doesn't matter. It's income investment for the rest of our lives. But news grinds us into thinking it's all bad all the time. Anyway, on our education segment coming up next, right after the news here, we're going to talk about anchoring. We'll be right back after Fox News. Hello and welcome to hour number 2 of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and these, of course, are my opinions and my opinions only. And it's not this station, a broker-dealer, and we're not here to tell you what to buy or sell. We're not here to regurgitate the same old news. Hey, guess what? The stock market went up 1% this week and blah, blah, blah. On made-up news, right? We just make it up. Because of rising oil prices, because of declining oil prices, because really the president tweeted or didn't tweet. Whew. Nonsense. Fundamentally, we need to understand that stocks are representations of business, that you own a piece of a business. That's what you have. These aren't totes at a horse race track. It's not a casino wager. They're businesses. And businesses operate on profitability. The future profitability of a company is why people buy a stock, period. Or they buy it to generate income in the future, now and in the future, on the hope that it will raise dividends in the future. You say, well, hope. I mean, yeah, but hope. How about it's always happened? Over time, the whole market, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the S&P 500, the good, the bad, the ugly, the WorldComs and Enrons are in those numbers too. The ones that just go, bye-bye, and disintegrate capital completely. They don't just stop paying dividends. They also disintegrate capital. And yet the market collectively, the income keeps going up collectively, more than covering up for the ugly of the market and the bad of the market, the ones that just don't do anything. The ones that used to be a story, right? They got big enough to be in the S&P 500. And then they just go away. But we turn this into some kind of weird game. Like we're supposed to know red and black on any spin of the wheel. We need to know if the market's going to go up today or down today. We don't know. I'm going to place my bet on up. Really? How about buying a business, a piece of a business? And that's what we want to talk about and keep talking about. Yeah, for decades. Been doing this for over 30 years. Crazy. On the radio for over 30 years. Closing in on 40-year. I can't believe I'm that old, but it's true. And all we ever do, more and more now, is focus on daily price movement. And nobody would set out to do this and think in terms of, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to talk here in a minute about anchoring and also how the news impacts that whole thought process. We turn this into some bizarre game. And it causes, because nobody would set out to say, you know what I want to do is I want to try to drive myself nuts, feel really anxious and concerned. I want to immerse myself in really tense thought, so I could make really good investment decisions. Who would do that? I mean, you know, it's like to a child or grandchild, they'd be like, honey, that's not the best way to make decisions, okay? What we want to do is take a step back. Let's take a deep breath. You want to breathe with me? It's going to be okay. Okay, thanks. That's how we make decisions. We don't run around here, let me see if I can impact my brain with more negative stuff and come to clear decisions. We would never, ever think that was smart. But we do that. And then we wonder why we don't do well in the market. I mean, how can you fail in the market? You want to know how? It's a simple thing. It's really a simple thing. Because when you look at lots of squiggles on the way, lots of squiggles, I give you that, right? And I know you have a linear brain, and it's kind of like goes from the left to the right in kind of a straight line. That's how we think. That's not what markets do. They go up a lot, and they come down a bit. And they go up a lot, and they come down a bit. And they equal out to this big, long average of 10%. Excuse me. 10. Single-family homes. I know everybody loves them. You know we're going to have renters, and they're going to all pay for everything, and nothing could ever go wrong. The house will never be empty, and it's all wonderful. It's sunshine and roses. Yeah, you know, I got to go unplug a toilet once in a while, but that's it. So easy. You know what? It is so easy. That single-family homes have gone up 1% more than inflation, like 3.5% since 1950. Okay, really great returns. Not great returns. So as far as that goes, I'm not saying you shouldn't be getting commercial real estate or all these things. You're a developer. Great. You built the Zion building. I'm sure that's going to be a great project. I'm sure the people that invested in built that thing over decade, pushed it through the ever-increasing bureaucratic mess that's called Boise City. And put up with all the bureaucracy and all the you know, really great bureaucrats coming in going, I don't know if we should approve this or approve that. What do you think about that? It takes years to do. Years. That's where the wealth is built. Of course, because of expertise, not because of 1% more than inflation rate. It requires expertise. And markets, for some reason, because they're priced every day, they scare people. They do. Because nobody would choose a 3.5%, 4% return investment over one that did 10. Nobody would. And guess what? You're not allowed to fix the toilets at any of the companies you're buying. They don't want your help. They don't want you to come shovel the sidewalk. They don't want your help. They only want you to say, here, we'll buy some of your stock. They don't even care if you do or don't, because it doesn't matter. That's not what they use to drive the company. It's astounding. And because we just can't get our eyeballs off of this daily news, I mean, just think about this. We can't look away. We just can't look away. When you look at viewership on CNBC, as an example, which is a very good example of when we might be focusing on the stock market. When the market's doing okay, nobody's watching. But oh boy, did we have a spike in viewership. No wonder they seemed so excited on CNBC when the market was tanking. They had people watching. They had people watching. And then as the market bottomed and ripped higher and kept ripping higher and kept ripping higher for thousands and thousands of Dow points, thousands of points. You were up 15,000 plus, 15,000 Dow points from the bottom. You sure wouldn't know that from the news. You just missed it. You just missed it. And we miss it because of all the angst and the fuss and the worry, the concern. Yeah, these are real problems. They were real problems 20, 30, 50, 80 years ago too. But we recover. You see, we just can't look away from the train wreck. And it doesn't help us at all when we do that. And we Google. It's okay. We're not watching TV. I don't watch much TV. That's okay. I can certainly relate to that. I don't either. Do we Google? I want to know more about the recession. Yeah, we do. Spikes in Google searches during those periods. We can't stop it. So what's wrong with getting information? What is wrong with getting information? Well, that's a fair question. Isn't that what we should be doing? Isn't that been the great search for all time? The answer is yes and no. You want information, but without a proper context, without a proper really background. Is that information knowledge? Or is it just another data point? You have data, but without any context, you don't even have information. With some context, you have information. But you really don't know how it fits all together globally. I mean, you can say, it's $1 bazillion for this. But if you don't know what $1 bazillion is, that has no reference point. Market's too high. How many times do you hear that? Every day. Well, maybe you don't hear it every day. I get to hear it lots every day. Because the market's too high. For thousands of points, it's too high. But we don't forget. We don't remember that we've been saying it's too high for 10,000 Dow points. We don't remember that. We don't remember that all the people have been parading on TV telling us that Europe was going to be the end of the world. That Greece had us nailed. That Obamacare was going to bring it all down. Yeah, we had an overreaching government that made the economy so much slower than it could have been. That if we'd have had 4 or 8 more years of this, I'm pretty sure the government would be so big we would be like France, incapable of moving anymore. But that changed in November. But that doesn't change the naysayers and doom and gloomers. It never does. They find something else to doom and gloom on. And we listen to them. It's like we have an urge to panic. We want to panic. Oh, I really want to be so wound up and worried and fussed. And then I can go make my investment decisions. We can't. But here's what happens. $1.1 trillion were taken out of mutual funds. $1.1 trillion out of mutual funds. Since 2007. As the market has skyrocketed, $1.2 trillion went into bonds. We missed it. Cash sitting at over $12 trillion in cash. Earning what? Negative real returns. Wow. It's just amazing. But you know, I know. But don't worry. Tomorrow there'll be another really big thing to worry about. And don't think it's just like Pollyannish. I know that's the easy thing. It's out here Pollyannish. Don't you realize what's going on? The hurricanes are going to sink the economy. Yeah. Temporarily, probably cause a little tiny hiccup. Well, but North Korea, I know, it's a big problem. Huge. And as I was talking to Kevin about, we don't know what the outcome's going to be. It's a huge problem. There's lots of huge problems. Always are. But when we always look to the news and we anchor to those thoughts, to the one thing. Anchoring really is, this is the one thing. We focus too heavily on one piece of information, and guess what we usually do? If everything's going good, we anchor to the fact that the market's going to do and keep doing well. Just ask those folks in the late 1990s how that turned out in 2000 when the tech bubble burst. See, it's on both ways. But anybody's, oh, the market's all high and everybody's all high. It's all too high. It's all euphoric. Really? Really, with like over $12 trillion sitting in cash, trillions have moved over to bond funds so they can earn, you know, 2% 10-year treasuries. What could go wrong with that? Gosh, I don't know. If interest rates went higher, I don't know what could go wrong with that. Trillions out of the market as it rockets to all-time highs and keeps going. And then we anchor to the negativity on the downside. Yeah, but, you know, we could have a 2008 again right before I retire. Okay. We could. What if we don't? Well, that'd be okay. Well, it wouldn't be okay for you. You'd be out of the market. And so how is that okay for you? Well, I'll get back in. No, you won't. There's trillions still out. Best estimate, 80% of these gains, 80% of the gains of this massive bull market have been missed by the average investor. 80% missed. Sitting it out, zigging and zagging, worrying about the next crisis. It's what we do. And you see, that's what... It's interesting, we've had some reflection on this at the office lately, right? What do we do for people Do we pick the best investments to outperform the market? Do we zig and zag and do this and this? The answer is no. We don't. Yeah, you try to pick good investments, high-quality funds, high-quality ETFs, put a proper portfolio together to meet somebody's needs. Of course. Doesn't mean you beat anything. That's not the objective. But the most important thing we do, literally, is keep people from making silly mistakes, focusing on the wrong thing, anchoring to the wrong things, finding reasons to panic, pushing the panic button, overindulging in negative, 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 negative. That's not about outperforming the market. It's about outperforming our own investment temperament. It's what we do. It's what everybody does. We all do it. We all do it. It doesn't mean you have to react. We don't have to be animals. It's our own human nature to crave. To crave maybe certain foods for you that I don't crave, but I crave different ones. Our hormones crave normally the opposite sex. But our hormones do. Doesn't mean we react to that all the time. Our hormones also get us enraged and angry at times. We don't go punching and lashing out at people. Any more than overreacting and reacting and just being an animal about it is the same thing as we have got to think about our investments. Am I overreacting? Am I sitting here indulging in constant drip of negativity and expecting to rise above that? Because you can't. You don't have to react to the negativity, but if we keep dripping it in, it'll affect you. And you'll miss, yet again, not learning the lessons of the past. So yeah, we got to invest, but this isn't a hard game. You have to finish the game to win. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, I'm tired of talking to myself. We need some calls here. Seriously, is there anybody out there? 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, please do give us a call. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's start off, though, with an email here from Michael. Dave, the analysts are all screaming the U.S. is too expensive. Are there better bargains elsewhere in the world? If so, where? Are the emerging markets cheap or dear after all this worldly unrest? Mike, thanks for the email. And by the way, that email address is dave@petsofinancial.net. Really good question. The answer is yes. It's too high. It's too high. It's too high. It's too high. And I really am not kidding. The reason I always come back to this statement, they've been screaming this for 10,000 points on the Dow. Okay? I mean, for a long, long, long time, the market's been too expensive, way overpriced, and you got to get out. All it seems to do is the more they're wrong, the louder they get. So we have to remember that we really never know, and is the market expensive? And I would argue the answer is no, it's not expensive. Certainly not to the alternatives. However, from overseas, are there some better alternatives? And the answer is yes. Emerging markets do offer a much cheaper stocks relative to earnings, relative to dividends, relative to growth prospects. Here's what we have to recognize. When you go into emerging markets, you also have to be dealing with, in many cases, corruption. I know Washington, D.C. is really nice and clean and rule of law applies, unless, of course, you know, the Obama administration deciding that they wanted to target some people through the IRS. We're not corruption-free either. But there is a better rule of law here, and that is that does have a strong place. Granted, there are people in the government. The Justice Department was clear, meeting with people like Clinton on the tarmac. They seem to be above that. but it's certainly not Brazil, corruption-wise. You certainly do have some, at least on an individual basis, some ability to go to court. So there is rule of law, and we do deserve, because of that, less corruption, a more stable economy, better property laws than most emerging markets. We deserve higher ratios. It's safer investing, right? So in other words, you have to pay more for U.S. investment. But there are times when emerging markets, with their super growth rates, because it is the largest growing middle class in the world, but nobody wants it. Again, back to what we talked about before, anchoring, right? Where we anchor to what the current situation is. When markets are really, 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 really good, everybody expects markets to be really, 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 really good. That's what we expect. And so people overinvest in what has already gone up, creating bigger bargains somewhere else. But that turn occurred last year in emerging markets. It started to outperform for the first time in years. It has been outperforming the U.S. market by a lot. You say, well, then now I don't want to get in now because it's already gone up. But look at the 3-year and the 5-year numbers. They're flat, still vast underperformance over longer periods. We have to be careful when we make these analysis, though, Mike. It's something we noodle on a lot. And I'll give you, I'm going to shift it, if I will, a little bit. I've been talking about emerging markets, which I think the thing about emerging markets that you have to understand is a simple bullet point. Here it is. You have to be investing 5 years or more in emerging markets. Have to. Because they just don't move in a straight line. Well, they move straight up and straight down, but over cycles. You need to be thinking 5 years, 10 years. That is the hardest thing. God, this is just agonizingly hard to tell people that dieting doesn't work, but regular exercise and not eating crap does. That's not a diet plan. That's a life plan. And over a long period of time, you are going to be stronger, happier, healthier all the way around than you otherwise would be. Period. We all know that, right? But again, we take this back to investing and we just want to chase the latest hot star. We don't think in terms of long cycle investing, which is why we run from one mutual fund to another. This one stinks and it's a value investor. And you run over to the growth and then now it's value's turn to lead. This stupid growth manager stinks. I'm going back over here. And we go back and forth and back and forth, thinking we're managing our investments and not thinking long cycle. So we've got to break through that and think in terms of what do you think is going to do well over the next 3 to 5 years? And we mean that. We don't just say that garbage. We mean it. We live it. We go out there and we say, hey, I am investing for the next 5 years in this. Is it cheap or dear? And don't be dissuaded if in 2 years it's actually cheaper than when you started. You add more. That's how you become a great investor. And you have vast, vast wealth. Then we say, that's awful simple. It is. But in practice, so few do it. But all that do are financially successful. All of them are. All patient investors are successful investors. He said, well, I want to create $1 billion. Fine. Well, you got to invent something then, okay? But if you want financial freedom to retire when you want to, put a few bucks away and be a great investor, and you will have way more money than you ever dreamed you would have. And that's that hard part, that we can't make that difference. So taking this back to your very specific question, it is overseas, it's cheaper. But we got to think long cycle. And you haven't missed emerging markets. You missed the first easy part. But guess what you did if you followed my advice? You also caught the last down part, which is normal. But did you stay through that to enjoy this nice move? And what we believe is going to be a very strong cycle for emerging markets. And foreign stocks, here's where we struggle, okay? Europe has so vastly underperformed the U.S., Europe and Asia. God, I mean, it's not even close over the past 5 years. It is a terrible investment to have anything overseas compared to the U.S. Not that they've lost money, but compared to the U.S., not even close. Terrible investment. So, of course, people gave up. Get out of here. I'm not going to do it. I don't want anything overseas. And then we get all the, if you just buy the S&P 500, you're buying global companies. So it's just like being international, but it's not. And so when we're looking at prices, we also have to understand this. Europe doesn't grow as fast as the U.S. because they don't invent, they don't do creative destruction over there. What's the last thing Europe created? You know, I'm not talking about pretty cathedrals and outdoor museums. That's what Europe is. But they don't have a vibrant workforce that turns over. They don't have small businesses creating things. It's all big business. It's all big government. It's all nanny state. Except that's changing in some places. France, for the first time, probably in my lifetime, did not elect a leftist. They didn't. In fact, 75% of the vote did not go to socialists. That's incredible change, potentially incredible in France. That's France. Italy is working hard to revise their labor laws. So Spain. Europe declared that they were leaving the Union. They want independence. These are changes that maybe we're going to see over time can be more investable. But you have to understand this. If you are a slower growth place, slower growth thinking, less innovation. See, they don't have any Googles there. They don't have Apple. They don't do Netflix and Priceline. None of these places do. Nowhere. We act like this is some kind of weird little accident. It's not a weird accident. It's because we embrace creative destruction. Some people do. The rest of it, everybody wants to become like Europe. That's wrong. We don't innovate and create. It's just wrong. Sounds good, but it's wrong. It's wrong for the lowest people on the economic ladder because creativity brings forth all of those opportunities. So when we look overseas, we have to be careful to say their P.E. ratios in Europe are so much lower than ours. I think enough lower that you have better gains. But don't expect this return to the mean. That's what I'm saying. We deserve to be selling for more. We create stuff. We grow faster. They don't. But that might be changing. So I do believe you should be getting in front of some of those changes. Mike, great question. I love it. But yes, overseas offers better opportunity, particularly in the emerging markets. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Really would want and love and need. We need calls. So do give us a call. We'll be right back after Fox News.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I think what we'd like to do is have like one call to make sure that the phones are working. That would be really cool, right? Maybe I'll grab my phone and check it out here in a minute. This is crazy. I have never done. I mean, well, maybe, I don't know. I've been doing this for 30 years. It was like 30 years ago that maybe had a show without a phone call. This is incredible. So do ring us up, okay? And in the meantime, Vicky writes, is asking a really great question about when do you get an advisor if you happen to win the lottery? And I thought that was interesting. I did. You know, I thought that was an interesting question. So, Vicky, I don't know if you actually did win the lottery or if it was just a fun question. When do you get an advisor if you win the lottery? And to me, this is a bigger question because it's not just, hey, I just won the lottery. What about an inheritance? What about selling property? You come into a large amount of money suddenly. Okay. What do you do? You're darn right. You need to have some advisors. I mean, goodness gracious, if you're not used to it, you don't grow into it. how does that go well? You know, it's kind of like without all of the people helping out, right? The people advising a college, you know, again, a 21-year-old, 22-year-old superstar, fill in the blanks, basketball, football, whatever, who just signs a $25 million contract. No wonder those didn't go well. What do you expect? They don't have any financial background, have hardly lived life at all. And then you drop this massive amount of money on them, and they're supposed to handle it well. They don't. So the answer is immediately, Vicky. I thought it was a fantastic question, really, because it circles so many things. When do you get an advisor? Immediately. Immediately. Because you've got to start making a plan immediately for what you're going to do. Or at least to start the thought process, right? Which is kind of like, how much of this do you want to give away? How much are you wanting to give to your friends and family? What kind of income do you want to live? What kind of lifestyle are you looking at? How do we go ahead and set up a reasonable budget for that? Reasonable. Not, you know, like tying your hands together. You can't ever enjoy it, of course. But man, that enjoyment goes away fast, really, really fast when it is all focused on things. Thing vacations, do, you know, super vacations, super cars, super whatever. If that's all you're about, then actually life kind of sucks. It really does. There isn't any meaning, no lasting meaning. And that's what you want to try to avoid. You want to have purpose. Now, all of a sudden you have money. Now you want to have some purpose around that. What can I do with it? That's really cool. And that's why you do it right away. And that's true whether it's an inheritance or, you know, or a lottery, okay? It's a sudden influx of money. What do we do? Be thoughtful. Think it through. And the best way to do that is to have an advisor to help you think it through. Now, of course, we've talked many, many times. Not all advisors are good. You got to be careful. You got to do your homework. Pick a good advisor, okay? And, okay, so next step is, what does that mean? Well, first step is check them out in FINRA and see if they have any complaints and stuff. Make sure that they're legitimate. Check for references. Do they have a bunch of complaints? I mean, all of these things are pretty. Are they certified financial planners? Have they taken that time to do that? Or are they just insurance agents that are going to try to drop you all, you know, drop it all into an annuity? Because there are lots of people to do that. Here in a couple hours, you'll hear all about that. And you'll hear about it again next week and over and over and over and over and over. You need to have top-notch advice. And you know what? As I say that, I don't want to imply that there's anything wrong with insurance agents. When it comes to insurance, it's great. But taking a large lump sum of money and just dropping it into a high commission product, that's not right. It's just not right. Anyway, thanks for the email, Vicky. I appreciate it. And again, if you have an email question, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And we are going to go ahead and take a quick break here. This is our final break, leaving us plenty of time. That way we can test the phones. They are not working. I just got a text from my buddy. They are not working. This explains a lot. Thank you, Dan. I so appreciate you telling us. This explains a lot. We need the little check mark thing on there, right? Thank you. At least we know. I guess we'll have to, I'll talk with you. Hey, shoot me an email. That's it. Everybody, your questions, bombard us right now. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Okay, it looks like we got the phones wired up and going. And then also, as a reminder, remember, if you're using your cell phones, you have to dial 208-580-5436, 208-580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We have plenty of time left, so please do give us a call. We have an upcoming, this is really, really cool. I'm not going to be around for this, which is disappointing. But Colonel Mark Tillman, who was actually the pilot during 9/11, pilot of Air Force One during 9/11, is going to be in town. This is sponsored by New York Life. from 7:30 to 9 a.m. at the Riverside Hotel. You got to get tickets for this. My suggestion, although you can go to Facebook Commerce Products and get your tickets and ticket information there, my suggestion actually on is, well, that's where you'd want to go, I guess, because since we're heading into the weekend here, that'd be the best place to go. But this would be fascinating. It's certainly a historic moment of our life to wonder what in the world is thinking and what's going on and wondering if we're under attack as the towers are hit. And Air Force One goes up in the air, and then they separate the president, the vice president. They're off into just a very fascinating time so that the White House is mobile and up in the air. What an interesting thought, and what happened during that time. Colonel Mark Tillman, again, that's going to be September 11th. Is that Monday? I think that's – is that Monday? What is today? 10th? 9th? I think it's Monday. 7:30 to 9 a.m. at the Riverside Hotel. So do check that out. It's facebook.com/commerce/products, all that stuff, okay? And you should be able to find it in there. If not, give us a call back here. We'll try to get more information for you. All right, and again, being sponsored by New York Life, which is just fantastic. Nice of them to do that. All right, let's go ahead, and as we're wrapping up today, apparently we don't have anybody who wants to ring in here, so let me just reiterate again. Where is value in the world? This was a fascinating discussion. Where is value in the world? What should we be doing right now? Why don't people invest? I mean, we've got all these millions of questions. Why is so much money, $12 trillion sitting in cash? Why? What is the end game to that? How much of a correction do you wait for to do that? How much of a guarantee do you want? What are you willing to trade off? But you see, when I hear people saying, yeah, I'm holding a lot of cash, I say, well, what is the plan? What is your end game with that? What are you going to do? If you're holding a lot of cash, is that what you're living on? You know, like short term. You're worried about the market, like we do with income people, right? I talked about this a few weeks back. If you need the money, you need it out. Not just because, oh, North Korea, or oh, the Trump administration, whatever worry you have or whatever you picked up off the news to fuss about, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you need money short term and you think that the world is great. We always have market corrections. So when you're planning for income, you don't plan on, I'm going to pull all of my money out of the market and miss the big correction, then I can come back in later. What's the plan for cash? Are you going to spend it down? If the market falls 5%, are you then going to look at all the news and all the problems in the world and all that and decide, of course, you can't really invest now? That'd be foolish, because things really are really, 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 really bad. And we forget and don't invest at all. That's the problem we run into when we don't have a plan for the cash. So again, if you're going to spend it short term, get it out. You should have already had it out. We don't sit around because we think the market looks okay. That's crazy. Don't do that. Markets look fine, and then they hit. They get hit. That's what they do. They have normal corrections. But we have got to understand, too, why does the market hold up? Is it phony? I don't care what they want to call it. It's up. Corporate profits are at record levels. Corporate cash flow is at record levels. Dividend payments are at record levels. Of course the market's at record levels, for crying out loud. It should be. And on top of that, we don't have, you know, have you ever heard the index Wilshire 5000, right?
Right.
Implying there's 5,000 companies out there. There's less than 3,000 now. For the last 8 years, we've made it increasingly impossible to bring companies public, want to bring companies public. Nobody wants to go public. Why would I want to go public? Now I got all these reporting, I got all these problems, I got all these things I've got to do. Yes, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that at all. So less companies are coming public. And then on top of that, and don't miss this, there are all these mergers of companies. So companies are going away like they always have, but lots and lots of companies are buying growth. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a huge takeover in the biotech space. Gilead buys out Kite for like $16 billion. Kite's a money-losing company, by the way. They're buying growth of a cancer drug. United Technologies buys out Rockwell. Two monster companies. Monster companies. That stock leaves the market. So when we talk about and wonder why or how the market could stay up, how about corporate buybacks? Companies like Apple are buying back massive amounts of their stock every year. Every year. Every day, actually. Buying back massive amounts. So we've got mergers, acquisitions. We've got fewer companies starting up. And we've got stock buybacks. There's a lot of demand for stocks, even though the average investor has sat this out and missed. Leads me to believe that as we go forward, we maybe need to be resetting our thought process, unless we have more IPOs, initial public offerings, unless we get more of that, more opportunities to invest in. Why wouldn't the growing demand of the world continue to allow stocks to, again, in theory, be at high levels, higher than normal levels? That's a real possibility as we move forward. It certainly is. I'm not saying it this time is different. That's crazy. You see, it's always different. It's always different. All markets are different. But to sit there and say, because P/E ratios are at a certain level, when we have interest rates at 2%, alternatives aren't good. And demand for stocks continues, but there's fewer of them. Why would this be puzzling to people? So I think the doom and gloomers